Portland's favorite morning roast.
Who was the second hottest golden girl? Oh, you want to rank the hot golden girls?
It's time for your sunrise guys.
If Blanche is number one,
was she the first TV cougar?
Ooh.
Andy Dirk Johnson, Brandon Sprague.
You're going to say Estelle. You're going to surprise me, and I'm not going to judge you. Estelle seems like she was probably wild.
Dirt and Sprague on Portland Sports Leader, 105.1 The Fan.
Hey, welcome back in the second hour of the radio program. Dirt and Sprague here on 105.1 The Fan and the Fan Sports Network. That's 1080 AM, the Odyssey app, YouTube. Are we up and live? We're on YouTube this morning.
Everything's rolling, it appears.
Hello, good morning. Hope everybody's Wednesday is off to a nice little start. It's good to be with you. A lot to get to in the second hour of the radio program. Mostly unpacking the Blazer season and the feelings of all of it. And
Hags, everybody.
Hags. A lot of hags out there.
Time to hags.
Yeah.
Have a great summer, everybody. We'll see you. We'll see you in October.
We'll hag it up. We'll see who are we still going to talk to and be friends with next season, because, you know, you always wrote hags in a yearbook and then didn't see that person until school started.
Who's moving away with their family, never to be seen or heard from again.
Yeah, Rob Will might be choosing to pack up and leave. Even though we have his bird rights, we might just be like, man, we can't pay that kind of money. Yeah. So we'll have to kind of wait and see on all that stuff. So the Blazers fall in five.
They did last night. It
season
was over
comes to an end.
Relatively quickly. I know that they made it, put a little lipstick on the pig there in the fourth quarter with City Sissoko and
they took that timeout at 17-4, and I'm like,
this thing's over. That game was
12-2,
over.
12-2 it was over. You're like, oh, no.
90 seconds into the game, the game was over, and you could just tell. San Antonio was knocking down shots. Portland looked like they were ready for the offseason. They blew double-digit leads twice over the weekend at home. That thing had overwritten
Spurs
all over.
Spurs have been watching that Celtics game in the fourth quarter, and
we're not doing that.
Don't do that.
Yeah, I mean, Julian Champagne was like, we're done.
Yeah.
3-3-3. Okay, all right. I mean, I'm going to keep the game on, but it was an immediate, wife get home. She got home from work. Game starts, 6:30. You got to watch the game. I'm like, yeah, it's just about to start. Oh, you're locked in on the couch. Here we go. And then after about 10 minutes, I'm like, you need any help with anything? You need to clean the dishes? We need to
I'd say about mid-second quarter, I was like, I'm just going to do the dishes now instead of waiting until the end of the game.
Get it over with now. Yeah. Anything else we got to check off the to-do list before we go to bed? I'll just, okay, let's see. Still 20. Okay, all right. Let me clean this thing up. Let me take the garbage out. Let me see. Oh, 25 now. Okay, I think we're all right.
Third quarter started. I missed the first 4 or 5 minutes, and I yelled, what's the score?
Somebody else is in the living room.
And my daughter's like, 73-46.
Okay.
Oh, God.
I think we're all right here. Nothing to see here. We'll see you next season.
That's all she can hear from me. Oh, God.
You know what their season was?
Expired.
Yeah, it was expired.
And their run came to an end.
Yeah, it did. The funniest, I don't know where you'd go. I mean, the series was almost everybody thought it'd be 4 or 5 games at most, right?
Yeah, you won a game, Wemby goes down, you couldn't capitalize it over the weekend. The second you blew the lead on Friday without Wemby, the series was over.
Yeah, series was
any glimmer of hope that you had after winning game two and Wemby not playing just disappeared at that moment.
Yeah, and I know that they had that first half run when Wemby came back in four, but Dirt and I live bet the Spurs money line because we're like, I don't know about those.
We just saw them do that 2 days earlier without Wembanyama on the floor. Was not surprised.
If I tell you they go up by 30 and they end up winning the game 114-95.
Mm-hmm.
What is Victor Wembanyama's field goals?
Yeah, that was the unique part about the first half last night that was really depressing to see.
He made 5 shots. Yeah. He had 6 blocks.
Dude, they had, what do they have at the half? 66 points, I think, as a team, somewhere in the mid to upper 60s, and they only had
65.
One guy in double figures.
Yeah, they had 65
it
points.
It wasn't like somebody went for 28 in the first half and was just lighting you up. It was like everybody had 10 points that was playing.
Harper was awesome off the bench. He had 17. Johnson only had, I didn't even, Keldon Johnson was amazing in this series. He did some good stuff, but he only had 7 points.
The sixth man of the year didn't do a lot, and they still dominated you.
Starting lineup, 19, 17, 21, 10, and 15.
How about that?
Pretty good.
And when they needed to, late in the game, when things got down to 9, and you're like, do I need to turn this thing back on? De'Aaron Fox answered with an 11-0 personal run.
Yeah,
and no
De'Aaron
matter
Fox
what,
was the closer.
You want a 3-pointer off of a pick? You got it. You want to come out and close on me? I'm going to go to the hoop and finish over you. All right, there you go. This thing's back up to 20, and the game is over.
Yeah, unfortunately, that's the way it went for our beloved Trailblazers. Very odd, too. I thought Because we'll dive into more of, like, the season's over now. There's, I mean, the series is what it is. We talked about games 3 and 4, and, you know, you were lucky to win game 2, in my opinion, and you lost game 1 pretty convincingly. So I just, the series is kind of a wrap. I don't know what more there is to add other than that was who I wanted them to play to see where they were truly in the West.
They gave you an indicator of where you're at.
And I think they at least showed you, hey, you want to get to a certain level? This is where we're at, and this is a young team.
This you are a long ways away from this, and our three best players, well, maybe not three because Fox is still a hell of a player.
Fox is one of the three best players.
Yeah, so they're three of their four best players, maybe. I guess this is the scary part about the Spurs. I don't even know where Dylan Harper ranks on their roster.
No, Harper's, if you said top four players for the Spurs, I would probably say, well, the whole season's different than right now. But
yes,
if you went whole season, I guess, yeah, maybe Harper's just the odd man out there because you got to go Keldon.
Because he was sixth man of the year.
De'Aaron.
Right.
Stephon. Wembanyama.
The point, though, remains that they have three young guys that they hit on in the draft and they will be building around for years to come.
Yeah.
Their backcourt is set. Whether Fox sticks around long term or they decide to eventually move him when they feel like Harper's ready to slide into the starting lineup. They got a lot of options that they could choose from, and no matter where they turn, there's an impactful player waiting to happen. Carter Bryant, who showed flashes at times, and some games doesn't even sniff the rotation.
He played 1 minute yesterday.
That's how deep, they were up by 30 points, and he played 1 minute, and then he had moments where he had an impactful dunk or a defensive stop in this series and showed you, oh, that's right, there's flashes there. He also was a lottery pick. So I think that's the biggest takeaway from a scary note, right? Like, I think out of the game, there's two different reactions. One is like, let's be appreciative of the season and what it was, and it was a step in the right direction and all that. And I'm not saying any of those opinions are wrong. And then there's the other side of it for me, watching this team do what they're doing, looking at their age and their contracts and the bird rights and all of that. And you are 100% spot on that. You don't say 10 years because you never know what the NBA could bring. Victor Wembanyama's legs could snap off for all we know because they're made out of twigs. But you just look at the ages of their roster and you say, you wanted that litmus test of where do we stack up, man? You're a long ways away from that. Not that we're surprised by it. The series went basically how I thought it was going to go. But I hope it's going to serve as the wake-up call that's necessary going into the offseason.
Yeah, it'd be interesting. Greg Oden's point yesterday on our show was, like, wait till he gets Giannis strength. And I was like, oh, God.
If he gets bigger and stronger?
See, I don't think he gets much bigger. I think when he gets strong, it's Kevin Durant doesn't get enough credit, I think. He is stronger than people know.
But like, he can't bench 135, though.
Well, that was the draft. He can bench like 320 now.
Can he really?
Yeah.
That's pretty remarkable.
Because it was a thing that I think he is a very insecure person. So the report of not being able to bench 185 came out at the draft. But can't draft that. He did videos when he was in OKC at the tail end. He was like at a gym.
That's remarkable.
Posting videos and like 300 pounds he was bench pressing. So like, those guys don't even look that big.
No.
But they're stronger than you think. If he gets to, like, Giannis, I kind of wonder if that kind of amount of muscle can work for Wemby's body.
Yeah, did Giannis go too far? Because now he's constantly hurt, right? Like, he might have taken it a little over the top in terms of the adding of muscle.
What's your body built for? Yeah, that's right. The tough thing.
What can it handle?
Look at Anthony Davis. He's had kind of the same thing, too. He's bulked up and he's gotten hurt a lot. But
yeah.
I think the point remains, like, that's why I wanted them to play it. It wasn't fun to watch that happen last night. It's not great to see them choke 3 and 4 away.
No.
It's more just like, I would rather have a real honest assessment of who you are and where you're at than, I don't know, have some misleading false idea of where you're at. Don't give me a reason to run it back. It's basically where I was at is get exposed, show the weaknesses where I think that they obviously are, and you roll it out, see how it goes. They won a game. That was a success in many people's minds because a lot had them getting swept.
Mm-hmm.
And now you have a lot of questions and how everything is going to operate this summer. It's fascinating. I text with, I think it was Hyken. I text a couple games ago. I was like, I know this sounds weird because they won game 2. And I think it was going into game 3. I can't wait to see what they do at home. I'm excited for the Moda to have home playoff games. I'm almost mentally to a point where I want to just get to the summer because I don't think they're winning this series.
I've been there for a while.
And I'm more excited about seeing, okay, you made the playoffs, cool. You got an all-star out of it. You've got some pieces that had good seasons. What is the offseason going to be? And then games 3, game 4 happen, and now we're here after 5. And I'm like, yeah, this is – I don't want to be in this situation. I'd rather be the Spurs, but we know they're not. So it's like, okay, how do you take steps to get closer to what that was?
Yeah, I think your point on a false sense of security is good, because I would argue that's what the organization went through last year, where they went, and I know they ended up making some, like Anthony Simons got traded, and they brought in Jrue Holiday and bought out DeAndre Ayton. But last year, they go on that kind of little mini run at the end of the season, largely against irrelevant tanking teams or teams without their best or two best players. And we looked at it and said, well, now everybody's getting a contract extension because look how good we were in the back half of the year. But in reality, we didn't really do anything that mattered. And all of the defensive metrics that they built those extensions off of ended up being a bit of a lie.
They were incredibly misleading.
And
even this year, they were
an indicator of what you were going to be coming into the season. We all came into the conversation before the year, we're going to be a top 10 defense in the league, and they were not a top 10 defense in the league. And they got better again later in the season, but ironically, what happened?
Their
they played a bunch of
easy.
Bad teams, and they didn't beat anybody with a pulse for the last 2 months of the year. And so, I'm with you that it's nice to, I think, have a clearer picture in terms of where the gap is and where the difference is. And I think it's an alarming one. I hope for a lot of Blazer fans. Of the reminder that, like, man, this isn't an aging dynasty that you're going to have to try and climb over. San Antonio's not leaving the Western Conference. Oklahoma City's not leaving the Western Conference. The ultimate goal is to compete at the highest level, because if it's not, then what the hell are we doing here? And there is a stark difference between your two teams. And so while we can sit here and pat ourselves on the back and say that was a successful season, I'm not going to come out and kill them for losing to San Antonio, because I expected them to lose to San Antonio. And there certainly were a handful of positives. The reality remains, man, like you were a galaxy away from doing anything that matters in this league.
Pretty big gap there, yeah.
And this goes back to, and I made this argument, the point that you're making a couple of weeks ago. I remember getting back from Hawaii and being back from vacation, like, hey, all right, playoffs are around the corner. And I don't want to poo-poo. I was at the game on Friday night. The atmosphere was fun. The weather was great. The city was certainly into it. Like, it was cool to have those little mini moments and have kind of some Blazer fandom excitement back. But it was incredibly short-lived. And now if your goal is to not have it be short-lived, you got a lot of really hard questions you got to answer this offseason, a lot of really tough roster decisions to make. And coming out of that playoff series, to me, I don't know about everybody else, but there's a bit of a murkier picture on your roster and what exactly you have, which is, again, why I'm glad that they had that series. Because if you would ask me 2 weeks ago, hey, Dirt, how do you feel about Donovan Clingan? Hey, dude, he's had a great year two. He was awesome. He clearly got better from year one to year two. There was growth. All of that is a positive. And then coming out of the series, I'm saying he was unplayable for the majority of it. So how exactly do I feel? The picture got a little murkier for me.
I didn't think he was good last night, even though his numbers
were
better.
No, he had a couple threes. Like Kamara, who was a guy who had a really good year, shot 37% from three. He couldn't do anything offensively for five games in the playoffs. Nothing. He can't make a shot. And so there's a lot of those little examples where all of a sudden maybe the way I felt a week or two ago hasn't totally changed. And I'm not saying give up on everybody, but I think it was pretty glaring how bad some of your guys who we thought had good years ended up playing in this postseason series.
Scoot completely disappeared. His last two games were abysmal. What was he, 0-for-7 in game four, right?
Yes.
So he finished 2-of-13 in the final two games with 5 points.
Yep. After the Dylan Harper trash talk moment, he just disappeared from the
Dylan
series.
Harper literally stole his soul.
Yes, he did.
Jrue Holiday was pretty abysmal last night.
I mean, he's fine, but he's not a number two scoring option, and he's getting older.
Well, I think that's the point. That's the point I made yesterday, and it just showed itself really bad last night. Now it's a closeout game on the road, so it's like not shocking they lost the way they did. But look at their, just the starting five. Like, it's one thing to tout what guys did over the year and say, honestly, hey, growth. Hey, good season. Tamani Kamara, good season.
Good season.
Don't think he's going to make All-NBA, by the way.
No.
So that's last year, and he's still a good defender. It's not to say he's suddenly not a good defender. It's just the crowd of that conversation is much bigger this year. Donovan, we all agree, good season.
Took a step in the right direction.
But if we're using the playoffs as also part of the conversation,
it has to be a part of the equation.
You had 1.5 players last night capable of scoring in your starting lineup.
Yep.
It doesn't define guys, but right now Tamani Kamara is end of Memphis run Tony Allen in the playoffs, which means what to people?
Right.
And Donovan Clingan is largely unplayable against anybody
with
real size or hyper-athletic. And it's not that they won't change, they won't have better moments. It's just that now we're in the roster building phase of, hey, remember the identity. I'd say this. You used last year at the end, and I think it's a good one, because we got a little blowback, I think, based on I didn't buy what they were selling us as an organization. They went You want to talk about going so all in it'll hurt. They went all the way in to try to tell us that this was suddenly a defensive juggernaut. Their entire identity from an organization standpoint was
head coach, defense,
we're
GM.
We're defense. Yeah. Our head coach, length. defense. Yeah. And we're like, are we sure about this? And everybody here locally was telling me they were sure this was a top seven defense in the league. No doubt. And I'm like, I don't know, man. They played a lot of crappy teams last year at the end. And what did they come into the season with? Well, their head coach got arrested by the FBI, and he may be pleading guilty any minute now because the other guy in that case also pleaded guilty. And their defense was very middle of the road. In fact, I'd argue many games awful.
Yep.
When they played really good teams, that
legitimate
defense
teams.
Was not good.
Yep.
And then what did it do the last 2 weeks of the season? It became a top four defense in the NBA. Well, they've turned the corner now. Yeah, they played the Grizzlies, and they played the Nets,
and
they played the Pacers, and the Pelicans, and like you have to take that into it. So suddenly the defensive identity they were touting, it completely evaporated, and then it picked up at the end of the year again because somehow your schedule is easy every year in the second half. Like, I think that's the other part.
Teams in the Western Conference, that's part of it.
When you say Trailblazers identity, right now, all I can clearly say is Denny Dame.
Denny, yeah.
You know, Tamani is there, and he's not going anywhere, in my opinion. Donovan's there, he's not going anywhere. But the identity is not defense.
Nope.
That's not a defense. When Dame comes back, it's definitely not a defensive team.
He does not make you better on that end
so,
of the floor.
The identity part, they're still trying to find while also touting they found some stuff this year, which is a good thing. And now we get into the offseason and what you want. And that's where I ask, Blazer fan, what do you want this team to do? We got a bunch of poll questions up on this. You could chime in at 503-864-6326. Their season comes to an end last night. We'll talk some more about that. Hour number two rolls on 105.1 The Fan. Fan text lines 503-864-6326, a end of season edition. The Blazers year comes to an end, and now the pivotal offseason begins for our Trailblazers.
I will remember you.
Damon Jones pleaded guilty yesterday to try to get a lesser prison sentence. He's in the case with Chauncey Billups. So if we get some Billups pleading guilty news, we'll try to pass that along to you.
Yes, we will.
Blazers season ends. Here's Denny Avdia and what he gained from playoff experience.
I don't know if a lesson, but more an experience. I feel like that experience was needed for me, for the team, as a group. To fight together, to see how it is with playoff physicality, playoff atmospheres. I had a lot of fun, you know, and we left it all on the court. I left it all on the court. But, you know, you got to stay resilient, you got to stay together, and you got to do it together.
He didn't finish with exactly the 35 I asked for, but I thought he was at least trying to set the tone by the way he started the game. I was like, all right, Denny's got like 8 of our first 10 points. This is exactly what I wanted to see.
He was the only one doing anything in the first half.
He's the only one.
When they were down by 30, they had 20, and I want to say he had like 16 of them. He was the only guy doing anything.
Tiago Splitter on his future as going from interim coach. Is he the next coach? Is he going to be a different coach somewhere else? Like, here's Tiago Splitter on his future.
It's been the whole season like that, to be honest. It's not like now it's any different. So it's just I'm happy where we got. I'm happy with the effort. But the future, who knows? You know, I gotta sit down now with my family, with of course with the Blazers, and see what's going on.
I am in no way a great coach, but it's funny like coaching basketball at different levels. And what's interesting to me is getting on social media and watching fans be literally so game to game on who should be the coach and not the coach.
Game two, re-sign him. You got to make him the guy. Last night in the first half, get rid of him. Fire everybody.
I mean, it really feels like it just blows with the wind. Oh,
yes.
We won the game. Tiago's the guy, dude. Nobody else could have ridden this shit. This is the greatest coaching job of all time. Then you get blown out by 30. He's a bum. Don't bring it back. And I'm like, that's not how any of that works. But
nope.
All right, we'll have to kind of wait and see on Tiago. I would say this, last night was actually my first real me out loud, what are you doing?
Yeah.
About Tiago Splitter.
Mm.
Like, all through the season.
Was it rotations or no change in the starting lineup?
None of that. It was, now look, the game is well in hand, right? Once the Spurs got like a 30-point lead in the first half, that game
was over?
Cooked. But it was at some point in the second half, and I can't remember what exactly the score was. The lineup was Rob Will, Drew Holiday, Matisse Thybulle, Sidy Sissoko,
hey.
Jeremy Grant.
Sidy had a night.
Sidy had a fourth quarter.
He had a night last night.
He had a fourth quarter.
Untouchable.
Good for him, though. Seriously.
It was, dude. In the playoffs, that was awesome.
Be able to dunk on your boy?
Yeah, on Wembanyama. He had like a double pump dunk, getting smacked in the head.
I cannot take you seriously in the moment when that's your five-man lineup. You are down by 28 points, so your solution is to just go largely all defense?
You need a little bit of offense in there.
You got to have somebody.
A little bit of offense.
You know who the offensive guy in that lineup is? It's Drew Holiday.
Yes,
who can score, but
night.
Yeah, he was not good last night, yeah. And he's not like a go-get-a-bucket guy.
No.
He's a distributor, defensive disruptor, and hopefully have a game where he gives you 25.
On a good team, he's a sixth man.
Matisse Thybulle, did he hit a shot in the series? I have no clue. Sidy Sissoko's a two-way guy. Yeah. Jeremy Grant had his worst playoff performance of his career.
Horrible.
And Rob Will is a putback dunk or lob guy. He's nothing else.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that was my first, what are you doing?
Yeah, that didn't make a lot of sense. I think that was the interesting part for me in the aftermath of the series. I know we have some audio on it, but what was getting punished and what was getting rewarded was interesting to me. Like the guys, it felt like there were moments where certain guys were being held to a standard that others weren't, if that makes sense. Like offense and defense are both important in basketball. We get it. But when you're down and you're having a really hard time scoring the basketball, there's only a handful of guys on your roster that even possess the ability that have an offensive pulse to be able to do it on that end of the floor. You know who one of those guys is not? Matisse Thybulle. Matisse Thybulle had a stretch, I want to say it was in the second quarter, where he missed like three consecutive shots. And he made a couple of nice defensive plays in the mix. One of them led to another three in transition. But guess what he did with that three? Clank.
Yeah.
Because he doesn't have an offensive game.
Yeah.
But he's playing you go ahead and get out there, you're in the rotation. When you're down by 30, like we desperately need somebody to score. And you're playing 5-on-3 when he's on the floor. And that was the unique part about me, or the rotations coming out of the series for me, of like Shaden playing 6 minutes. I'm certainly not going to sit here and defend Shaden. It felt like there were times he just didn't care. It felt like they subbed him in and immediately he's running at 50% speed. There just doesn't seem to be an intensity or an effort level that is necessary for playoff basketball. So don't take this as like I'm sticking up for Shaden. It's more of like, why is he the one that's playing 6 minutes and not a guy who literally can't make a shot?
So he was asked by Hyken in the postgame about Shaden not playing in this series, basically. And I didn't pull the audio, but I'll just sum it up for you because it's about a 15-second answer. He goes, well, Sidy gave us great energy. I thought Sidy gave
that's fine.
A
Sidy
really
can
good
play.
Effort.
That's, yeah.
And he goes, I only want to focus on the positives. So what
Why was Matisse Thybulle a positive? He literally can't shoot the basketball.
Well, Chris Murray was also getting minutes at one point in this series, and he also
didn't play last night.
Yeah, finally.
Matisse Thybulle played 15 minutes.
Yeah, I know. Like,
those are the things I think
both things are true. Yeah. Shaden Sharpe's time in Portland, it's super over.
It's absolutely over.
But also, the other part is true of, we're playing people who can't score the basketball.
Your options are limited on this roster. I will give you that benefit.
This is why this whole, like, we're a defensive organization. No, you're not. You got some guys who can play defense, yeah. But you're bringing in a 6'2 guard off of an Achilles who will be 36 in 2 months to be like a prime ball-handling, heavy-minute guy, and he never played defense before the injury, and it's certainly not going to change next. Like, you're not. You have guys who play defense. That's not your identity. Your identity needs to be Denny Avdia, more three-point shooting, so that's where Dame can step up, right?
Sure.
I'm cool with Drew coming back, and I know offense isn't his main thing, but like I'm cool with having a Drew Holiday in our locker room. Donovan needs to improve. Tamani needs to get – like these guys have to play better in big moments, and that's the thing that can suck and be great about basketball. The NBA is not about, oh, he had a good regular season. How do we define our rosters and our guys?
Right.
It's what you do in the playoffs. You think Detroit is going to go into the offseason and say, by golly, we won 60 games, but we lost to the 8th seed of Magic, who nobody thought would make the playoffs.
Right.
No. What did you do when it counted?
Yeah.
It's time to nut up or shut up. And right now, that organization doesn't have shot creators and guys who go get buckets. So, like, no, your identity is not offense. You gave up 114 easily to the Spurs, who largely quit trying in the second half.
Yeah, they didn't. I mean, they had 9 points like three quarters of the way through the fourth quarter.
I like getting bigger and longer and having guys who are disruptors, but you also have to care about offense. That's the cool thing I think about San Antonio. As much as you hate them, Wemby can score, Harper can score, Fox can score, Keldon can score, Vassell.
It's a hate us
because
they ain't a situation. Yeah. I just hate them because we ain't them.
They're all two-way guys. They're all guys who play defense right. and can get buckets.
And you can't leave hardly any of them open because they'll find. Like early in the series, we said, well, let Castle shoot all he wants. And then he had moments where he's carrying them offensively.
Castle, that's another good one.
Good
yeah.
luck. I also think, too, like the coaching thing is funny because they never do them any favors with the mic'd up moments. Like they just, coaches need to put an end to that. Don't let me be mic'd up.
Mic'd up in anything sucks.
They showed him at one point in one of those like third quarter timeouts. It's, come on, guys, keep fighting. Make a couple of shots. Yeah. It's like, dude, we're down by 28. And I know that they put a little lipstick on the pig late in the year. But to the larger point that you're making that I agree with, and it's why I brought up last year, and I don't want the same thing to happen back-to-back years. Mm-hmm. And it's one of the reasons I'm a little more optimistic now, because I don't think it's going to happen this offseason. And I remember doing this going into the playoffs and arguing it, and Blazer fans getting butthurt about it because sometimes they don't like the truth. Like, go back to the All-Star break on their schedule and look in the back half of the year and just rattle off the teams that they beat. It's a group of nothingness. Mm-hmm. It's a group of all lottery teams. You had a bottom of the NBA this year that there was a race in a way that we have never really seen before.
To the point where the NBA had to change.
They're changing the tanking rules.
Yeah.
And guess who you played?
A lot of those.
Largely teams. In the second half of the year. All of those teams. And so, like, that's great that you lit up the Indiana Pacers, who won 4 games this season. That's awesome. Can you light up the San Antonio Spurs? And the answer to that is no. And so this is where I just think there's a really dangerous game of putting too much stock into what we saw in the back half of the year and this argument that it was unquestionably a success. Mm-hmm. I'm not arguing the season was a failure. That's not the point I'm making. I'm just pushing back on the notion that we largely do in this city of getting high on our own supply. Of look at all the progress we made. Look at all the steps we made. Like, dude, we made steps against teams who were actively trying to lose games. We rose out of the bottom of the barrel to the bottom third of the barrel to get into the play-in situation. We barely beat the Phoenix Suns in a play-in game. How did they do against OKC in the first round of the playoffs?
They lost by like 22 points a game.
In every game, they got smoked. And again, I'm not surprised by that, but we were that close to losing a play-in game to Phoenix, who couldn't even sniff being competitive in a single half, it felt like, against Oklahoma City. And outside of Wemby smacking his head on the floor, like, there is this idea, I think, sometimes in this city that we try and pump up ourselves and get high on our own supply. And I'm trying to caution against that, and I don't think Tom Dundon's going to do that this offseason.
I don't think people are actually there. I think it's the opposite. I think you're not giving Blazer fan enough credit. I think both things are true here. It's no different than the Shaden play, but you have no offensive guys thing, right? I think you can say, don't allow that to be the definition of, oh, let's run it all back, which I don't think they will. But
no, because
we've been
you have a new
before.
Owner who is, I yeah. don't think it'll allow that to
I
happen.
I agree with you. But
in a previous group, that would have happened.
I don't, and I think it's also fair to say, like, the season was a success.
Sure.
No, that's not even a debatable point. They overachieved on their win totals.
They did.
They made the play-in, which is like that was my bar, was be in the play-in.
Sure.
They overachieved because I didn't know they'd be the 7 seed,
right?
Even though I had their wins pretty close.
My point is that the reason you did that is because you were trying.
I agree. But all I'm saying is I think all this is true, and I don't think you're giving Blazer fan enough credit. We have sickos out there that like eat up the slop and tell us that this roster took steps and to run it back. Yeah, I mean, I think every city does have a fan base. But I think most Blazer fans, the ones I hear from in person and the people who text into our radio program, I think largely are not disagreeing with anything. That it's like, yeah, this was fine, but you're not close.
Yeah.
So be active, be aggressive. That's all I'm saying. I don't think this is traditional 4, 5, 6, 7 years ago. I think there were a lot of Blazer fans split. Run it back, Dame CJ, forever. And then there was like the, can we make the big swing move and hope that we take the next step? And that was a debatable thing. I don't think we're there anymore. I think the vast majority would say, yeah, season was a success. What are you going to do this summer? Because it better be big.
Yeah.
And so we could talk about that as we roll on hour number two. All right, Dirt's going to keep yelling. I calm you down, dude.
I don't know.
Calm your boobs. We're all together.
I hope that
we are largely all. Dude,
let me ask you this. So
I have not seen enough evidence to suggest people here are going to think the dumbest crap of.
Can I just ask this question, okay? Because even in the idea of it being a successful season, which I'm not trying to argue it was a failure.
What's hard is losing by 30, and on that night seeing all these. It's a great season. I know that sucks to see, but it's also reality. Season's over.
Let me ask this follow-up question.
Yeah.
Because part of it being a successful year to me is answering long-term questions about your roster and how you feel about guys.
No doubt.
Denny Avdia.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
Click. Check. Click. Tamani Kamara.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
We're not concerned about the offensive impact on that end of the floor.
His offensive numbers
were
good.
Tony Allen.
I'm the one that brought Tony Allen. So
this is why I'm asking, when we're arguing it's a successful season, Donovan Klingon.
Okay.
Go down the list of the roster.
I understand, but the difference between what they did in the regular season, which both we'd say were good, right? Tamani shot 37% and averaged like 14.
Yes.
Donovan was awesome in year two from where he was year one when he couldn't play 8 minutes without dying.
And my point is largely it came against dominating tanking teams.
That's fine.
And that's not an indicator of competing at the highest level.
Well, it didn't. Their averages on the season are from playing the amount of games they played.
They beat one team that was not in the playoffs, that was not in the lottery in the second half of the year.
I know.
That team did not have their best player.
You're arguing two different points, though. You're arguing where they got was because of their schedule, and I'm not arguing that. I'm just saying, like, what Tamani and Donovan's whole seasons were jumps. They were good. Now, what they are in the long term, I don't know. The long term for me is 2 to 3 years. That's how I view all this stuff. Like,
yes.
Even the Spurs, I'm like, the 10-year dynasty. And I'm like, yeah, we'll see, dude. I've seen it many a time in the NBA. Pacers might win the title last year. Snap an Achilles. Top of the draft. Let's see what they're at next year.
I thought the Nuggets were going to be...
Right. We do this all the time. Now,
totally
Oklahoma
fair.
City seems to be a little different because of the way it all is structured. San Antonio may be that way, but I look at it a two, three-year window. Donovan, Tamani, yes. Next.
See, and this is where it's murkier to me than an easy yes. And that's the reason why I'm just not quite as, this was a successful
year. Because they lost by 30. It was awful last
night. It's not even just about that. It's what I saw for five games in the playoffs.
No,
they were unplayable offensively.
I understand that.
In a playoff series against good teams.
I don't disagree with you.
Shaden Sharp.
Scoot
Henderson. Okay, keep going. Like Drew Holiday.
Talk about murky. That's Scoot Henderson.
Drew Holiday. What's he look like in 3 years?
I want Drew Holiday next year.
That's fine. You can want him on your team.
Yeah.
Is he your second best player next year?
No, he shouldn't be.
Okay.
He better not be.
What's Damian Lillard next year?
I don't know.
Okay.
Nobody knows.
This is the point I'm making of. It's just a little bit murkier than blanket statement. Successful year, great year, playoffs. Okay, see you next season.
Those are different, though. Like, if you said Sprague, it's them getting to the 7 seed and losing in 5 to the Spurs. Would you define that? If you said this in October, would you define that as a successful season? I would say
give me the context behind it. But yeah, largely I would say yes.
Yeah, blanket.
But give me the context behind
it. Look, you can tell me the schedule and all. I'd just say yeah, there. Now we can get into the roster of it. And we can disagree on this guy or that guy. That I'm totally fine with. I actually love that stuff.
I think Kamara is a really good player.
Yeah.
That was alarming to me what I just saw.
It was
for five
alarmingly
games.
Awful. I don't disagree with you.
You were playing 5-on-floor when he was on the floor.
He made me look up Tony Allen playoff numbers because of how bad he was.
Donovan Klingon got better from year one to year two.
Yes.
He was unplayable in the playoff series.
He was pretty
he
awful.
He looked slow. He was horrible defensively.
He's also
he couldn't
20.
Hold on to the basketball.
He's also 20. I think that's fair to say.
Where's that internal development going to go?
We'll have to wait to see.
You know who else is 19? Dylan Harper. He won a playoff game in this series.
He was awesome. Oh, my God. He was awesome. You're not wrong. That being said, Shaden Sharp.
He's gone. It's over. It's done. Like, it just, there's
not a world where I think I want him back, to be honest with you.
There's not a world where he wants to be back either.
I don't think he cares about anything.
Yeah,
want me to be honest with you?
I'll give him a little more credit than that.
The baby Kobe thing, I killed last year, and I didn't want to talk about it much because it's a jokey fun thing. I didn't actually think he was going to be Kobe.
Yeah.
It was more, I saw him shoot a turnaround fade in summer league and was like, oh, little baby Kobe. I said this about him maybe his second or third season. Yeah, I think it would have been. Third season. Fourth season? Is this fifth season?
This is his fifth year.
All right.
Fourth
season is what I said.
Let me see. Let me double check that.
Yeah, that's fine. This is what I said about him.
Fourth year.
You don't need every great player to be Anthony Edwards, LeBron James, Kobe Bryant, vocal, in your face, or, you know what I mean? You don't need him to be that guy. Tim Duncan was famously very quiet. Mm-hmm. There's an element of, like, me watching you, even if you're quiet, going, oh, that dude's all in, he's nasty. Tim Duncan, you could watch and go, no, when you see him on the court, there's a lot of FU energy.
Yeah.
I've never seen it from him. Never.
Does not have that dog in
like
it.
I would imagine the org is going to be using him in a trade is my best guess.
Right.
I'm telling you, as somebody watching the product, see ya.
Yeah, I don't need to see that anymore.
I'm not trying to
scapegoat him for the playoffs.
Everybody was bad.
I mean, literally everybody was bad at points in this series. Denny was probably your best player, but even he disappeared in the biggest game of the series in Game 3 when you had a chance to take a stranglehold of it and take a lead, and he was atrocious in Game 3. The experiment is done. That was the other part of it for me, of like watching this backcourt who were back-to-back top 10 picks, who we kind of, I think, already had a feeling on going in.
Yeah.
And Scoot gave you a little bit of like, hey, there's a little bit of life there from old Scoot Henderson. And I remember asking the question after that game, is that going to be the Myers-Leonard game, or is that going to be a launching point? And I think we have our reminder, like, he disappeared the rest of the series.
It certainly feels very over for our backcourt guys that they tanked and drafted in 3 and 7.
And now we're going from a building team to have a starting backcourt of 36 and 36 next year.
Yeah. Well, and then Denny's not young. He's not old, but
no.
Like, you know, this is, he's up. So it's, yeah, you go from a young, the youngest team in the NBA.
We're going to be that young next year,
yeah,
man.
Yeah, we're going to be a little older next year.
A little longer in the
got some young guys in there, but we're going to be a little older next year.
I mean, I'm psyched to watch Dame put on a Blazer jersey again, but we don't know what it's going to look like. But we know the starting backcourt will be Dame and Drew.
Sure.
And Shaedon Sharpe and Scoot Henderson are just not long for this organization, it feels like, at this point.
It felt, yeah, that was one of my biggest takeaways, you know, minus your anger. My biggest takeaway was seeing Scoot on the bench for the whole fourth quarter, just kind of staring off, and then Shaedon not caring at all about where he was.
Yeah.
And I just was like, it hit me of like, that's it. And I can't say with certainty they trade Scoot. They very well could just bring him back and say, let's just see what one more year is before
we decide.
He's
got another year on his rookie deal anyway. So
you don't have to be in a rush.
You don't have to trade him.
It feels definitely like Shaedon is done, but largely I viewed it as a backcourt of like, a couple games should not overlap what the sample size has been.
Yeah.
I can't imagine that's how you're roster building. If that's how you're roster building, we got a different conversation.
Well, the other thing that could change this is we don't know who the head coach and we don't know who the GM are going to be next year. And maybe the new head coach and the new GM have different ideas about certain guys on your roster.
Maybe they
feel like they could get more out of certain guys and give them more run or different roles on the team.
Maybe they do. All right, fan text line's 503-864-6326. We're back with more on 105.1 The Fan. If the NBA tank rule changes that they're calling 3-2-1 is confusing, don't worry. We're also a little blind on this. We'll talk Keith Smith at 8:30.
Will we still be confused after that interview? I think the answer is yes.
I can't wait for Keith Smith to make you eat crow and be like, Tumani Kamara, really good. Donovan, really good. You got some really good pieces out there. Yeah, shove it, dirt.
Well, it's interesting to me because I remember we had this debate going in the end of the season of like, it's just weird for me, the guys who are the focal points going to the playoffs, and I would feel a little bit different if it was these young guys. And I think you and a lot of other Blazer fans pointed out, well, it's just you just kind of have to pivot to who the guys that you're building around on. And
yeah,
at the back half of the year, you would have argued, mm-hmm, if I asked you before the playoffs started, who are the three guys that they seem to be building around? Denny Avdija, Tumani Kamara, and Donovan Clingan.
Those are the three young guys, yeah.
Two of the guys were unplayable in your playoff series.
Yes.
And that's all that I'm bringing up, mm-hmm, of this idea of like, we're sure?
So,
I'm just asking questions.
We don't know what they're going to do with the roster. I just want to point this out because I don't want to talk about Tiago. I know people are going to talk. Maybe you bring him up later. I'm okay with that. We don't know what's going to happen with Tiago Splitter.
You know my stance on coaching. Figure out talent on your roster first. So, if Tiago's back, that's great. If he's not, I don't. Whatever.
Is right in your wheelhouse. This is what I'm doing for you. How about this one? Top paid coaches in the NBA. Because, you know, we got Tommy Two Nickels here.
Yeah, you got to pay for a good head coach.
You do. Steve Kerr. You got to pay Steve Kerr.
Great year for them.
What seat are the Warriors?
Without Kevin Durant and Steph Curry, how many titles does he have?
Eric Spoelstra, Miami Heat.
Yeah. Yeah.
Got to pay Spo.
Great run for them this year.
Yeah. Ty Lue, Clippers. What seat are the Clippers? Doc Rivers, Milwaukee Bucks.
He was the fourth highest paid coach in the league.
Ime Udoka, how's that feeling right now in Houston?
Not great, man.
Yeah, okay. Rick Carlisle, Pacers. Yeah. I mean, he's a great coach. I won't throw that one on him.
Yeah, that was a tough year.
Jason Kidd, Mavs.
Yeah.
All I'm pointing out is
those drinks.
I'm not trying
still
to say.
Still a brilliant coaching move, by the way.
I'm not suggesting these guys aren't great coaches. Like, I would do anything to have Spo. It'd be awesome.
Yeah, sure.
It's merely this. It is a roster-dependent situation, to your point. I think coaching is important for a lot of other things.
No doubt. Culture, keeping guys in check, you know.
Is Joe Cronin here next year? We put a poll question up on this. Where would you vote? Are they going to keep Joe Cronin? Because I can't think of anything more exciting if I'm Joe Cronin than having the owner say, yeah, you can hang. But knowing it's probably my last year if we don't achieve really great success,
yeah.
Which means I'm going to do all that I want to do.
I'm going to go out on a limb and say no. I just think the
you
way...
You think he's going to make a change at general manager?
I do, yeah. I just I think he's been that way as an owner. I think he shows you he has no problem ruffling feathers. There's been some interesting comments, I think, from both parties involved in that.
Wow.
And while there are certainly successes of Joe Cronin, Denny Avdia primarily, the one, the other thing that I could not stop thinking about, and we said it at the time last year when it happened, and I will reiterate again. The Young Hansen draft pick is the move that makes him look like a genius or keeps him from ever being a general manager again.
Young got in the game last night.
He hit a couple threes, didn't he?
0 for 2.
That's right. He missed them both. You drafted a guy in the first round who was unplayable. The year after, you took a center in the first round with a top 10 pick. You took another guy at that position that was a project while you still need young players. I saw our buddy Eric Gunderson last night make a good point. And say, you know what the Blazers might want to do this offseason? Use some of your future draft capital to move into this draft to take a guy. Because you know what we still need? More young talent. We're probably moving on from our two young guards. Who did you have the chance to take last year? Young talent who could help you play. Give you 10 minutes a night, 12 minutes a night, flash in the pan here or there.
I think we'd feel good about Carter Bryant.
You drafted an unplayable guy.
Yeah.
And he's not going to be playable next year. That's a four-year project.
Well, we'll even be your backup big. They might
if you're re-signing Robert Williams, what are we doing? I said it at the time, and I'll reiterate it now. That was you're either going to look back at that and say, man, that guy's a genius. He saw Kcerrito Jokic in the first round, and he grabbed him, or he will never be a general manager again. Nobody had him being a first-round pick, and we took him in the first round.
We love to tout one guy that had it at the late first round. But everybody
could have used another player who could have played some impactful minutes off the bench for you, man.
Everybody
Coward
would have
looked great. Bryant would have looked great.
There were other teams that were going to take him, so we had to take him.
Had to take him right there.
Had to take him.
Somebody else was going to grab him up.
When I was told they were worried the Nets were going to get him, I went, oh my God, that might be my sign to not draft him.
Yes. If they like him too, run.
If the Nets like him, get out of there.
In the other direction, as fast as you can. So, yeah, maybe I end up being wrong there.
You think Dundon's going to make
that
move,
you know my
huh?
ultimate stance, too, of, like, this just weird when you start one and not the other. And so who's hiring the coach, Dundon or Cronin?
All we've heard is Dundon talking to guys, which is bizarre to me.
It's a little
I'd imagine
a little
the
strange.
General manager should be the one making
Are you not
decision.
Giving him a say? let's start over here. Let's get a fresh coat of paint on the walls.
Who can we hire for general manager for $410,000?
I'll do that job. Hire me, Tom. I'm right here for you, buddy.
You would be way too reactive.
Oh, I'd trade everybody
we
right now.
We lost by 20 in a closeout game?
Kamara's out. Klingon, you're gone. Get rid of him, dude. Fire everybody. Burn it to the ground and start over.
What would you say your passion is, Andy? Duck football. But you're a general manager of an NBA team. Yeah.
Yeah, I'll tell you what I wouldn't do. Draft Young Hansen in the first round.
We're going to recruit. We're going to recruit our ass off here.
You know what else I wouldn't do? Cheat to get him in the first round. Get suspended for it. Like, how is that?
What if those texts were like,
how do you survive that?
Heart eye emojis. Like Schmidt sending eggplant emoji.
Yeah,
great game tonight in China.
Oh, yeah. Those 5'5" guards you were dominating in China. I'm taking you in the first round, buddy.
Loaded third hour. Keith Smith's going to join us at 8:30. We got Saturday Story in the final hour. Dirt and Sprague, hour 3 on 105.1 The Fan.